is a podcast series that I have wanted to record for ages. Each episode, I talk to someone who excels in their field about the highs and lows of their creative journey and how and where they find joy in their lives. Some people have asked me about the name. Why about last night? Well, because I meet my guests at the end of the day and we chat over a drink or two. Fashion has always played a really important part of my life, so it goes without saying that I would want to feature one or two wonderful creatives from this industry on my podcast. My love for fashion started at a really young age. I remember going to India, Kolkata actually, every year from about the age of six and being mesmerized by the rolls and rolls of finest silks and softest cottons in the markets. I even had a period in my life, can't quite believe I'm telling you this, where I would make my own clothes. But needless to say, there is a huge chasm between my teenage creations and the creations of this episode's guest, Sheila McCain. Sheila's first design job was for Donna Karan in New York. She's also worked for Dax and Oscar de la Renta, and in 2013, she was appointed Jaeger's Women's Wear Creative Director. In 2016, Sheila decided it was time for a new project and co-founded Lane Activewear. Lane is a beautiful designer activewear brand which is growing day on day, and Sheila's latest collection was recently stocked in Selfridges in London. Lane has many, many loyal fans, including me, of course, but really cool people like fitness guru Tracy Anderson. So I'll start at the beginning and find out how Sheila got into fashion design. Of course, I have to find out how it was to work with and for Oscar de la Renta and why she made the decision to start her own brand. Sheila is one of those people who is an artist at heart with a massive talent and vision, but she is also an extremely savvy businesswoman. Integral to growing and developing her businesses, Sheila does a lot of work with the charity Every Mother Counts, and I want to find out a little bit more about this too. So about a month ago, we met up at 108 Brasserie in the heart of Marylebone. We chatted over a number of French martinis in their very lively bar. Here's our conversation. So I am very excited about this one because I'm here with my mate, who happens to be not only an awesome fashion designer, owner of a brand. You're like a company director, fashion creative, all in one. The lovely Sheila McCain. Hey, Sheila.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I love podcasts.
I wouldn't not have you. I wouldn't not have you, and I couldn't not have you.
Yeah.
And I just think you've got so much to say, because I think you are a creative at heart, and you're a businesswoman, so I think that will be really interesting to everyone. So why don't we kick off with how you got into fashion and fashion design?
It's funny, when I think about it, sort of probably my first inclination was when I was quite young, and my mother taught me to sew when I was about eight, and it was something that I always really enjoyed, and I see that now in my daughter, who's going through the same or a similar process of learning to make her own clothes and being quite creative.
Lovely.
And I think it's the first chance you have at that age to really sort of experiment with your own style, and it was just very...
And how old were you?
Eight.
Eight, okay.
And it was just like a really natural sort of extension of what I learned how to do. And then I probably didn't really understand that I wanted to be in fashion until much later. I grew up in a very small town in Kansas. Fashion did not exist. Nobody even said that word. You know, sort of like one magazine a year would float through the door, and that's like all you had to understand fashion. But then I studied textile design at university, and from that point, when I moved to New York, I really realized that I loved clothes. I loved something all about style, and that's what I wanted to do. But
well,
it took me a long time
stylish.
To get there.
Oh, so that must have been in there, in your DNA. Wow, we're like in a club now. tell me, did you study textile design in Kansas? Or
I did. I studied textile design in Kansas. They didn't have a fashion program. And so when I finished my degree in textiles, I was designing textiles in New York, and very quickly realized that maybe designing men's necktie fabric was not for me, and that
okay,
I wanted something
enough.
More. And I went back to school and studied fashion design.
Okay, so that's great. And that was in New York?
And that was in New York at the Fashion Institute.
So that was quite a big thing, going to New York from Kansas, was
exactly,
it?
Exactly.
America is just enormous.
I'm from a very small town of 300 people, which is quite funny. It's laughable.
Okay.
I know, exactly. To a city of 20 million. It was a big jump. But I think New York is one of those cities that allows you to find yourself in a very interesting way, and sort of the whole world's at your feet if, yes. if you decide to sort of leap on it and take advantage of the, what the city has to offer.
And so, I think it really suits your character.
Yeah.
Because when I first met you, I actually thought you were a New Yorker. So I was quite surprised.
I think New York's a love or hate city. You can either dive right in and sort of become part of all that it has to offer, or you can really resist it and, you know, not enjoy the sort of hustle and bustle of it. Some people hate it, you know. But
really, through that time of school and deciding to study textile design and having that epiphany that actually you really wanted to go into fashion design, that took you to New York, can you tell us a little bit about how the industry brings you joy? Because you've been in it for a long time. Really?
I have. I'm a survivor. It's a very interesting industry, because if you really look at the industry as a whole, the majority of the industry is made up of 20-year-olds, and so there's a lot of people that come into the industry at a very young age with, you know, sort of great ambition and enthusiasm and creativity, and then sometimes over the course of their career it can really get sucked out of you. I think the sort of day-to-day of being creative, not everybody can do that, and it's not sort of available to everyone. But I think you really have to have that underlying passion about clothing, about the materiality of it, about the construction. And for me, I think I always thought of fashion design in so many different ways. I thought of it as a very tangible form of sculpture, and maybe that's why it was sort of continued for me. And I think as long as I could continue to create new silhouettes and discover new fabrics and different ways of making things, then I was able to hold on to that creativity in a really sort of intense way for me. And that's probably where all the joy comes from. For me,
totally.
Because I have that kind of personality where I get bored really, really quickly. And if I don't have something new to sort of challenge me all the time, then I think it's, you know, I can lose my concentration a bit. And
that's so interesting, the drawing your inspiration from art, actually, and sculpture and stuff. Because I know on your Instagram, you love art.
I love art and architecture and sort of a lot of sculptural forms.
So shapes.
Yeah, exactly. Really. And I think of clothing in exactly the same
way.
Thank
you very much. Thanks. Just been delivered a lovely French martini.
Bottoms up.
Tell me a little bit about the evolution of your career and how that's brought you joy. Because you've done many different things.
Yes.
You know, you've worked for international designers, Donna Karan, Oscar de la Renta. You've worked for fashion houses in the UK. And you now own your own brand.
When I started, it was I was working for a very small hands-on designer, and that taught me a lot about sort of the whole process from A to Z, about having an idea and implementing that in a way, and like how you kind of turn an idea into reality. And then from there I jumped off into working for sort of major international brands. And the beauty of working for a major international brand is that you have so much support, and there's a team to do everything. There's a marketing team and a PR team and a finance team, and
it's like having a safety net, kind of.
Exactly. And you can just go off and create and be, you know, really free in your ideas, and you don't get sort of bogged down with all of the sort of logistics of how something's going to be turned into reality. Which I think is, as a designer, to have that freedom to, I mean, especially in my time at Oscar, sort of every material you wanted, every factory you wanted to work with, it was at your disposal. As much as you wanted to do, or as creative as you could possibly be, it was available to you. And I think there's something...
Was that an incredible time?
Incredible time.
I mean, that must have been
time.
Really special, because
yeah. He was such a gentleman.
Oh,
and I think
that's
so rare. It really taught me a lot about how to behave. Maybe more than anything, about how to be as a person, how to be as a manager.
Interesting. Yeah. So maybe gave you some pointers in how to run your own business later down the line, if that's what you wanted to do.
Exactly. And I think really how to manage creative people more than anything, because I think you're a creative person, and I think we don't sort of react to stimuli the same way that other people do.
No, we're not linear, are we?
Yeah, exactly.
No.
And if someone gives you a tight deadline, that tends to, you know, block creativity rather than free you up to think in a...
Although what's interesting about that, I don't know if you're the same, but I actually work really well when my back's against a wall. I don't know why, but it's kind of like I'm very good at putting stuff off until I actually have to do it. And then I suddenly go into this turbocharge mode, I don't know, is fashion design the same?
It can be. I think there's always that night before the show when it's all like, okay, this has to happen. And your best ideas flow because you really feel the pressure, but...
And the adrenaline is always a good thing.
Yeah, there's no bad thing with adrenaline, but I think to work like that for 20 years is probably impossible. So there's a bit of understanding that the creative process needs freedom, and it needs the allowance to sort of go out and explore and see things and move about and not sit behind a desk and be tied to, you know.
No. When you were with Oscar, you were part of a creative team?
Exactly, yep.
And so how much interaction did you have with him? I love that I'm calling him Oscar.
He was there every day. So whenever he was in New York, he was in the office. So we had an enormous amount of interaction, and I learned so much. He was really a mentor to me, so
that's incredible.
You know, a really amazing experience. When I first moved to London, I thought, what have I done? I left the center of the universe, which I felt at that time was New York, but I'm really happy now. And
Well, New York is a center of the universe, and certainly in a fashion sense. But I think, and maybe it's because I was born here, I'm kind of biased towards London, however much I love New York. But they have similar things, even though they're different. You know, there's so much style and diversity.
And the energy. Yeah. I think there's a great deal of energy in both cities. And I think when you're in your 20s, early 30s, you can just believe that you can become quite self-centric, and you just believe that you are the center of the universe or something.
You get older, you realize that.
Yeah, actually, I'm way down on the list, you know, even in my own circles. So.
Well, you're a mother like me, exactly. So we learn that the hard way. Well, the hard way, but in a beautiful way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't trade it, so...
Tell me a little bit about the pros and cons of working for an international design house as opposed to, and I want you to really tell us a little bit about your own lines.
Sure, absolutely. So I think, as I started to say, to work for an international company, you have the safety net, you have a whole support team of people that helped you put on a show and put into action. You have product developers, you have technicians, people that really turn your ideas into reality. But when you have your own brand, especially a small startup, you're everything. You're sort of your own CFO, which I should never be. You're the creative director, you're the head of marketing, you're the head of sales. And in reality, the buck stops with you. And I think it's one of the hardest things to learn as an entrepreneur. There's a lot of people who say, like, oh, I would love to have my own business, but to have the tenacity to be able to go through that and to weather the storms, because there's going to be storms.
Yeah.
And you have to realize that this is just a bump in the road to where I'm going, and you have to really dig deep inside yourself and ride that storm through and realize that there's better things ahead and not sort of let your head sink into it, which is so easy to do draw upon, you know, what you deem to be failure for the day or something.
And you must have such vision. I mean, do you remember the time when you decided, actually, do you know what? I don't want to work for anyone else anymore. I want to do something for myself, and this is what I want to do.
I remember that moment really clearly. I was working for a company at the time, and they were actually quite misogynistic, and they treated women in a very different way than they treated men. And I remember sitting through a meeting and just thinking, like, why am I not standing up and saying something?
So interesting.
So I came home from work that day and I made that decision on the spot. I'm going to quit my job. I don't believe in what they believe, and I can't be the face of a brand that doesn't believe what I believe. And so,
and I mean, I'm lucky enough to call you my friend, and I know how principled you are. So I can see how that would be a catalyst to going, actually, no, I'm not going to accept this at all. Because a lot of people probably just go through the motions. And I think going through the motions is quite hard when you're creative.
I think I've watched so many people suffer. And at a certain point, you realize that I'm an example for my daughter. I'm an example for the people who work for me, for all the young girls that are in my design team, this company. And if I don't take a stand, who is? And
so
I think there's always come to that point in life where you make decisions, and it's like, are you going to take this road or that road? And
yeah,
and I made a choice.
No, I totally understand that. I want to talk a little bit about there are so many different facets to your character, as there are to everybody's. To me, you strike me as a very thoughtful person. You're a very sensitive person. You have this odd blend of sensitivity, but you're very pragmatic as well. And I don't often put those two things together. I'm always very in awe of people who are pragmatic because I don't think I have that skill. And you certainly have a lot of business acumen. What I want to talk a little bit about is, I know you do a lot of stuff with Every Mother Counts, that charity. And I know that an ethical approach, female equality, these sorts of things are incredibly important to you. And not only do they run through your life, they run through, you know, you want to bring them through your business as well. How do you marry up your moral principles with running a successful brand? Because it feels like they're two different things.
It does feel like that. If you're a capitalist or if you want to make money, then you can't be philanthropic at the same time.
Yeah, and totally.
It's interesting. I was listening to a podcast and this woman was sort of saying that the best way that you can possibly be philanthropic is by making money. And we shouldn't be ashamed to make money doing what we want, because how can we help other people if we don't have the resources available to help
them? That's great, yeah.
And it was really like an eye-opener for me, because before I had always sort of like thought, oh, I want to do this, but I want to, you know, save all the children in the world at the same time.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to sort of... And then it finally occurred to me that the only way I was really going to be able to make an impact in a big way was by making myself or my business as powerful as I could, and just instilling from the very beginning all those principles that I wanted. And I look at the shoe designer Toms and how well he's managed to sort of, he just set up his company and he said, for every shoe I make, I'm giving a shoe away.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant.
And that was his sort of philosophy from the beginning, and I think I took that on board and I thought, like, if he can do that, why can't I?
Yeah,
like, why
absolutely.
Can't I?
And actually that whole sentiment really resonates with me, and this is what you're all about. I mean, you emanate this. There's a real strong sense of giving back whilst achieving your goals in a way.
Yeah, I think it was, like I said, it was really this podcast for me. There was a woman, and when she said it, it just, I was like, I can sort of sit here and I can help one or two children and mentor them after school, or I can make my business very successful and help thousands or millions of children, and why wouldn't I try to do that?
Yeah.
And it was just a turning point for me about really not being afraid and reconciling that you can be successful and philanthropic at the same time.
Yeah,
and some
no, that's
of the most
one of those light bulb moments,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I look at people like Richard Branson, and you know, he's uber successful, but also very, very philanthropic. And I think there should be that combination, should fit much more easily. It's almost like we're taught from an early age that you can't be both.
And yeah, totally.
It's about throwing out all of those preconceptions and just doing it the way that you want to do it, and making a business the way you want to make a business.
No, that's amazing. Tell me a little bit about how you, as I said, I mentioned, you're a mother.
Yes.
Your kids are a little bit younger than mine, so the juggle is probably even more important and relevant to you. How do you juggle that kind of personal, professional life balance? And how do you find joy when, like, we all have those moments where we kind of go, oh my God, there's too much going on.
I think I started out with feelings of guilt that I wasn't a good mother if I was working. And especially running your own business. I mean, you're working in such strange hours. You have the pattern maker there at 10 p.m. and it's bedtime. And I finally just realized that this is the way my life is, and it's better just to incorporate my children into it and let them see how a real life person does something rather than trying to set up this ideal.
And they probably, I mean, I've always found, for me, when I felt low about singing and I thought, oh my God, this is all too hard to juggle, I'm going to give up, my kids have been like, Mummy, don't.
Yeah.
And they've been my biggest supporters. And for your kids, they probably look at you and they're so full of love and respect for you, and they're so impressed with how you do everything.
Yeah, they're my greatest cheerleaders.
Yeah,
they've seen everything.
They
they've seen, like, my disaster clothes. They've seen, you know, me working all hours in the morning, waking up grumpy, and I think, if nothing else, I've set a very good example for them.
You
that,
have.
You know, hard work has its benefits if you just have enough sort of fortitude to keep going.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I just have to tell you about the guild. I am convinced that when we give birth, I think something, there's a chemical balance imbalance, or our DNA changes, yeah, and we get this guilt gene.
Yes, I don't know. I never felt like I was responsible for anything before. And then all of a sudden you have a child and there's this enormous responsibility suddenly
it's
sitting
in. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, in the most amazing way. I would never trade it for anything in the world.
I know,
but
it's wonderful. I mean, I know it's such a cliche and we often say it, but I would say, and I'm sure you'd agree, or tell me if you don't, but being a mother is the hands down most challenging thing, but the most rewarding thing.
I couldn't agree more. I have a couple of friends that are pregnant at the moment, and I try to tell them, it's, you know what, yes, there's going to be sleepless nights, and there's such a long stretch ahead of you, but there is nothing else better in life.
There isn't. So what do you do when life gets challenging? How do you find your joy?
I think there's a variety of things. One of my probably, I don't know, my headspace, I guess I'll call it, is running. And I run most days. I there's nothing better for me than just sort of like throwing on the shoes and heading out the door for, you know, 20 minutes even. It helps me just clear my head. I usually go for about half an hour, 45 minutes a day.
So it's meditative for you, really?
Exactly. I just throw on my headphones, and sometimes I listen to music, sometimes it's just listening to a podcast or just nothingness, like just being in the park on a very quiet early morning. There's sort of nothing better for me. It just allows me to process my thoughts in a very interesting way, and I think that's how I really got... how I started to work with Every Mother Counts. Someone sort of challenged me to start running again. I think they could see that I was sort of just working, and I didn't take any me time ever. And sort of reminded me, you know, you used to love to run. Why don't you do it again? And challenged me to run a marathon. And then
we need to Berlin.
Yeah, and so that's how I met the team from Every Mother Counts. And I just really fell in love with all the principles behind it, the people that were involved in the charity and what they're trying to do. I think when I really understood sort of all the tragedies that can occur in childbirth that are so unnecessary, I don't know, it just struck a chord with me, and I wanted to do anything I could to sort of help that, you know, with that mission. So.
But that's great, because it kind of gives you, I mean, you have such a strong moral compass that fits beautifully into kind of your model of life.
Yeah.
But for me, that wouldn't work. But I've heard from a lot of people, it's like just getting into the motion and it kind of clears your head. And
I think you have to do whatever works for you. I used to do a lot of yoga way before yoga was even popular.
And me too.
And that was my thing. And then I kind of moved on to Bikram. And then my next thing was running. I'm sure there will be something else next once my knees give out. Or something.
Well, it's, as you said, everything is like an evolution, really, isn't it? And you have to evolve. And I find it so interesting when at the beginning you were saying, you know, there are a lot of 20-year-olds that come into the business. You've really shaped your creative journey and evolved and to create longevity, really. And I suppose that must bring you joy. That must be so rewarding.
Yes, I think that for anyone who's worked in any industry for a number of years, there are many different facets of it. And I think if I hadn't probably set up my own business, I would have never discovered that I had the ability to, that I had my pragmatic side, as you call it. It's very left brain, right brain, and I think
I love that side of you. I'm in awe of that side of you.
But I don't think I even thought I had that until you're put in a situation where, you know, if you want to make something work, you're going to have to develop something that's uncomfortable for you. And I think that's one of the things I have to remind myself all the time, is if I'm putting myself in an uncomfortable space, I'm probably going in the right direction, because if I don't challenge myself or I don't face some of those fears, I'm going to stay in that really safe zone, and that's, you know, I'm never going to really develop.
That's so awesome, because it's that whole, you know, that there's that quote that everyone puts up every now and again, that life starts at the end of your comfort zone. And it's almost like that's what you live, because that's what you want to do. And it's brave, and it's fearless, and it's exciting, I guess.
And it's scary.
But it makes you smile, so that's got to be a good thing.
Exactly.
Tell me about, it's probably difficult because you started sewing clothes at 8, and you've had this wealth of experience. Tell me about some highs of your creative journey.
I think probably, definitely standout points for me were my years at Oscar, which I mentioned earlier. I also loved working for Donecare, and it was my first big job in New York. And
that's incredible.
You know, working in a skyscraper in New York.
Thank you very much. Do you want another one?
Yeah, sure.
Can we have two more, please? Thank you very much.
And then from there, my move to London, I think it was sort of brought a whole new sort of energy to my designing and a new way of looking at things. I think whenever you sort of embed yourself in a different culture that's, you know, unfamiliar to you, it brings to light all kinds of different ideas that you, even the simplest things. I remember falling in love with like Guernsey jumpers because I'd never seen one before. And I just thought, oh, that's such a beautiful, like, I have a weird affinity for workwear and
sort of
simple side of clothing in a funny
way. Well, you like tailoring, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think other highlights would be definitely my time of designing catwalk collections. And
that must have been incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I think to be able to really see your vision through from like the first sketch to the final presentation. And
for a fashion designer, that must be the pinnacle in a way, to see your creations go down a catwalk.
Yeah, and I think you kind of keep creating those mini moments for yourself. My sportswear collection launched in Selfridges today, and that was another big moment.
I know, I saw that on Instagram. That's so cool.
I walked in the store, and it was really great to see, like, oh, there's my collection. And so there's a lot of moments in life that sort of bring joy to you, and that you can find, you know, are your own version of success, whatever that looks
like
to you. So,
what about Lowe's?
Lowe's. When your factory doesn't ship on time, when you're wondering how in the world you're going to pay those invoices.
Okay,
you know.
So the practical things that kind of get in the way of the creative journey in a way.
Exactly. I mean, I think probably early in my career, there's a lot of, when you work in a very female-centric industry, it's also can be quite a vanity industry, and
yes,
there's a lot of people who are fighting for the same positions, and there can be a lot of, you know, nastiness. We've all seen The Devil Wears Prada.
We have, yes.
And you really question yourself, and I think for me, as a girl who grew up, you know, in quite a, maybe moralistic is the right way, sort of small town, some of that was quite new to me, and I think to sort of like find my way through the competition, find my way, and we all doubt ourselves at times.
Of
I think
course.
Probably self-doubt is probably our greatest enemy.
And so, don't you think as a creative that's part and parcel of it? I mean, sometimes I find it's a fuel.
Yeah, exactly, because there's no way to measure your creativity. It's not like, oh, I've made this much money or I've done this, or there's no sort of...
And I think also as a creative, I know you are a very successful businesswoman as well, but I think as a creative, we don't measure our success in materialistic terms, not in the same way that other people
exactly.
do.
Exactly, yeah. And you stop and think, am I ever going to have another idea or an idea that's as good as my last idea?
Yeah.
And
I know, inspiration is a wonderful thing, isn't it?
It's an intangible, though.
Totally, totally. Well, I'm very lucky because I'm going to spend the evening with you and we're going to go out to dinner. But before we go, Sheila, can you define joy for you in 3 words, please?
Joy for me is, I'm going to say relationships.
Yes.
Freedom. And... I don't know. Maybe independence.
Oh, that's wonderful. You're
I love
wonderful.
You too.
And thank you
for having me.
No, thank you so much for doing this. Let's
My pleasure.
Go and have some fun.